This week we've got a cool Mac Picks. David's here, Guy's here, and me, Tim Robertson. My Mac Podcast number 186.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com Podcast.
My Mac Magazine Podcast. I'm Tim Robertson, joined by Guy Searle. Hello, Guy Searle.
Hello, Tim. How are you today?
I am doing dandy, and we're also joined by David Cohen. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Why did you ask me how I am? He just asked me how I am.
Well, I'm just
confirming how you are.
We already did our cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin. We'll play that a little bit later on the show. We're going to change that up a little bit. Sam actually has his own theme music, and he's had it for a while for the Cool Mac Picks, but we've never used it on the show, so we're actually going to use it this week. It could be cool.
Have you heard it?
Yeah, I like the theme. It's very hip-hop-ish.
Snappy.
Cutting edge. It sounds pretty good, so we'll throw it in the podcast and see what it sounds like.
Excellent.
Cool.
So, big news of the week, obviously. Apple releases macOS 10.5.3. I have not upgraded yet. I've been kind of holding off. I knew that the podcast was coming up. I didn't want to take any chances on really, you know, screwing up the machine and not being able to do the podcast. So I held off. Have either of you upgraded, Guy?
Yeah, I went ahead and did it this morning when I saw it. Haven't had any problems. It's been running pretty smooth.
No? Was it a long download for you?
It ended up being, I think, like a little under 200 megs.
I know some people are reporting that it's like 450 megs for them.
If you get the combo updater, for an Intel and PowerPC is about, I downloaded it, and it's about 540 megs. So, but the thing is, I wanted to download it standalone because I've got a whole bunch of machines I want to do, and I don't want to run the download for each one.
No, that would not be fun.
No.
So have you uploaded to it or upgraded to it yet, David?
I just haven't had time to. I mean, I've got some machines that, obviously, I only use one machine for the actual podcast, so I could put it on one of the others, but I just haven't had time to do it yet.
Hmm. Yeah, I you know, like I said, my main reason was because we were going to do the podcast tonight, but I've been a little bit gun-shy of updating my computers to the latest and greatest OS the last couple times because, you know, things could come up and bite you on the booty, and I'd rather let other people play with it before I do. Make sure that something that I'm running isn't going to cause a conflict.
And with that amount of code being changed with a big download like that, I mean, you know, you can't help feeling that there must be a lot of changes, and that just introduces more possibility of getting a compatibility or a bug problem that might, you know, affect your machine. So,
right. This update is larger than macOS 9 altogether.
Yes.
That's going to tell you something, I think.
And it's almost, I mean, one of the nice things that used to be about Apple stuff is that the updates were less frequent and also much smaller than the stuff you see on the Windows side, but they're kind of challenging them now, I think.
Well, 10.5.3 has actually taken, you know, it's been a while since we've gotten an OS update. You know, sure, we've gotten some security updates and updates to Safari and, you know, things along those lines, but there hasn't been an OS X update in it's been 4 or 5 months?
I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but maybe it has. I mean, it's been almost a year since Leopard came out, right?
Well, it came out sort of September, October time
September,
last year, didn't
it? Yeah. That's right, yeah.
So it's about 7-8 months. So, you know, there's two updates in 7 months. I guess that's not too frequent. It just seems to be frequent to me. I guess you don't notice the time going by.
Yeah, 10.5.1 came out relatively quickly, as I recall. 10.5.2, I think, was in like January or February.
I think that was towards the end of January. But again, I could be mistaken. I never marked it down on the calendar.
Well, what I'm hoping with this update is that I'll finally be able to update or upgrade my kid's G5 iMac to 10.5, because I tried to install it when it first came out, and then I tried again with 10.5.2, and in both cases their Wi-Fi just went to total crap, and I ended up putting 10.4 back on it.
You know, yeah, this does, supposedly, it fixes some of the 802.1x networking problems that we've had in the past, so maybe this is the cure for it. But I have read some reports, specifically on MacFixit and Macintouch, of people upgrading their MacBook Pros, and then the computer says, oh, you don't have an airport card in this machine.
Huh. Well, I did, you know, I've got the 2.33 MacBook Pro, and I did it this morning, and it's been rock solid.
That's the main reason I didn't upgrade my MacBook Pro. Of course, I record the actual podcast on my iMac, but I thought, well, I'll just go ahead and do it on the MacBook Pro, and then I started reading some of those problems, and I was like, you know what? Right now, life is just too short and hectic, and I just don't want to deal with any major headaches, especially if I can't get that computer online. That would just drive me crazy. So,
yeah.
Other than that, you know, I'm looking forward to a lot of the changes, some of the reliabilities. I guess back to my Mac is finally working. That was my understanding.
Yeah, I actually got that working under 10.5.1. I could never get it working when Leopard first came out, but with 10.5.1, I got it to work relatively reliably outside of my own network.
You have any luck with back to my Mac, David?
The problem I have is that I only have one machine running Leopard, which is on most of the time here, which is my MacBook. Excuse me. And then I have a machine at work that's also running Leopard, but because at work it's behind a great big Windows-based firewall, there's no way that it's ever going to work from there. So yeah. I don't have a machine that's kind of available on either end of a distant internet connection to actually try back to my Mac properly. So I've never really bothered trying to get it working. What I really want to do is actually upgrade the Mac Mini I have on the TV to Leopard, because that's connected directly to the router, and then I could remotely control that using back to my Mac when I'm out and about. So probably now that 10.5.3 is here and some of the issues that have sort of been there with Leopard have been sort of settled down, then I will probably upgrade that Mac to Leopard and then set back to my Mac going.
So you're using the Mac Mini as kind of a media server?
Not really a media server, not since I got the Apple TV. I was using it like that before, but now it basically, any video downloading or anything that I'm doing goes to the Mac Mini. I've got a TV tuner on there and the Turbo.264 on there.
You could actually, if you could figure out when your wife is watching TV using it, you know, just start switching programs on her.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, the thing is that there would be no point doing that, because then if I was away and that started happening, she would just call me and have me troubleshoot it over the phone anyway. So I'd actually be giving myself a job.
Well, we don't
want to. This is going to be a shorter than usual podcast, because we are experiencing some Skype problems, which, heaven forbid, never happens. But we do want to touch on a few things before we wrap up this abbreviated version of our podcast. One of the things is, in 2 weeks, we've got the WWDC.
Yeah.
That's all the big chat right now online. Everybody's kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. I wanted to get your guys' prediction. We'll start with David. What do you think we're going to see other than iPhone 2.0? Everyone's saying, well, maybe we're going to see the iPhone 2.0. I think that's a given. I don't even think that's a rumor. I mean, Apple already had that event. He showed us, Steve Jobs has showed us that Apple TV, or I'm sorry, iPhone 2.0 is coming.
Yeah. I to be honest with you, I think a lot of people's expectations about what's going to happen to WWDC are going to be disappointed. I think the iPhone update is going to be fairly incremental. In terms of the hardware, I think the new iPhone will look very similar to the current one. Yes, it might have a 3G radio in it. Actually, wouldn't surprise me if it didn't. And in fact, it was only a hardware rev for memory. And I think it's all going to be about the software platform that the iPhone 2.0 software enables. Because, you know, WWDC is a developers conference. So I think they're going to be all about that. It wouldn't surprise me if they rev the Mac Pros at the same time. But I don't think in terms of you know, hardware or anything particularly new, I'd be very surprised if anything amazing comes out. I think it will all be about, you know, here's all the fantastic applications that developers have been working on using the SDKs for the iPhone. And I think there, you know, there may be some business announcements around how those applications are going to be offered on the iPhone and what that's going to mean for the iTunes Store. But I think people's expectations are kind of getting a little bit out of control in terms of what WWDC is going to deliver.
I think that's probably true with any upcoming Apple announcement. Don't you agree, Guy?
Yeah. I would say that's probably true. But you know, I got to say, some of the stuff that I've been hearing chatter about, you know, really kind of gets me excited. I'd love to see a return of a relatively small form factor, 7-inch. Not necessarily a Mac, maybe still using the iPhone software, but just something a little bit bigger with a chiclet keyboard and, you know, just something that's just going to grab us by the cojones and say, wow, this is really great. But, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So anything new in the Mac world for either one of you two that you're excited about right now? Let's start with Guy.
Yeah, well, if they come out with a new iPhone, and if it has at least 32 gigs of memory, then I'll be getting one. That's been my point of contention all along, is that the iPhone just doesn't have enough memory for me to also use it as an iPod, and I don't want to carry around a bunch of different devices.
Are you interested in, like, GPS? I know a lot of people think that it's going to be built in. I have my doubts about it. It could be, but I would be more interested, and I think Apple may go this route as well, because of the current generation of iPhones that are out there, a Bluetooth GPS unit, something that you can have close by your iPhone, but it'll work with the current iPhones and the new ones as well. Anything like that of interest to you?
Well, how would that work while you were out and about with Bluetooth?
Well, it's got to be within, you know, a couple feet of each other, but it's more for the car. You know, if you just leave it in your glove box or wherever, you turn it on when you're near your iPhone and they sync up, and now your iPhone is ostensibly a GPS device.
Well, isn't that kind of what they're doing now?
No, what they're doing now is kind of triangulation with the cell phone signal. It's about the farthest you can get from GPS.
Okay.
Right now, it's throw a dart at this small map, and you're somewhere in there.
Okay, well, you're not really in the Pacific Ocean, but you're Pacific Ocean-ish, you know?
Yeah. You're somewhere around Hawaii, we'll put it that way. I mean, it's not too bad if you're in an area that has a lot of cell towers. It could narrow it down to a couple blocks for you. But for the most part, it's just not accurate.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, if it can see public Wi-Fi, then it becomes very, very accurate, because they have this system that actually maps where hotspots are as well. But if you haven't got a Wi-Fi signal, then it's a little bit random. It's a Scud missile rather than a precision bomb, a laser guided bomb.
And I think it's going to be Bluetooth. Rather than something that you plug into the bottom of the iPhone to the dock, I just don't think Apple wants to plug anything in there. It's going to make it larger. It will be kind of unattractive. So I think Apple would rather go the Bluetooth route.
Well, they could also enable it with software and open that part of it up to third-party developers.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. If it's an add-on to the iPhone, if it's just a Bluetooth device, then really any application that's accessing the iPhone, that you're accessing on the iPhone, I should say, could use the same call-outs to the Bluetooth-enabled device.
Right, and that, the device itself could have its own battery.
Exactly.
Yeah, and maybe that's the way they want to go. They want to make the iPhone... I mean, people have sort of speculated about a larger iPhone that would be like a tablet or kind of like a modern version of a Newton. But maybe what they'll do is they'll stick with the current iPhone form factor, but add to it with wireless peripherals. I mean, you could very easily add, offer a Bluetooth keyboard with maybe a trackpad or something like that in it, and really turn it into a more usable computing platform than it is at the moment because of the limitations of the soft keyboard.
a lot of those issues are going to come down to how do we power these devices, because if it's Bluetooth, you have to have a battery in it, so you're going to have to change batteries in a keyboard, you're going to have to change batteries in a mouse. But people are kind of already used to that with Apple already sells a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, so yeah. I don't see that as a big drawback. Now, a GPS device, on the other hand, that's a little bit different, because you're going to have to sync it with the iPhone, and you're also going to have it charged up. You don't want people to replace a AAA battery in the thing.
All they have
to do is use the same method that they use for the Apple's own Bluetooth headphones. Headset.
I've used a Bluetooth GPS before with a Windows smartphone, and you know, you can get 8-10 hours out of an internal battery for a device like that, and then charge it over USB via whatever connection. So that would be perfectly doable.
It would also save on the iPhone's battery life if it's not built in, if there's no GPS built into the unit.
Right.
You don't have to worry about sucking the battery down.
And maybe that's how they'll offer the 3G.
That would be very smart. No, I think the 3G, if they come out with 3G, it's going to be built into the phone.
Yeah. But that is going to destroy the battery.
I think you're going to have the option to turn it on or off, though.
Yeah.
Don't you agree, Guy?
Yeah, I think 3G at this point, if they try to do it through a separate, you know, module or with a third-party developer, it just wouldn't fly. And it's 3G is as far as the iPhone goes for accessing the web and things like along those lines are going to be more important to people than GPS or some of the other, you know, gee whiz golly features that people have been talking about for the new iPhone.
Well, GPS, though, once you start using a GPS system, and I talked about this on the last show about how my car broke down.
Right.
Yeah.
And I used a combination of the iPhone and the GPS. And, of course, if the iPhone would have had GPS, I wouldn't have needed the Garmin unit.
Yeah.
It's simply fantastic. Once you have it, you know exactly where you are, but that doesn't really help you. Unless the device that has the GPS can also tell you what's around you, be it a gas station, especially if you're traveling and, oh, crap, I forgot to fill up at the last station, or we're getting really low on gas, where's the nearest gas station? If you're hungry and you feel like Chinese and you're in an unfamiliar part of the city or another state, it's going to tell you. Or in my case, my car broke down, and I needed to get to the nearest garage. I found it very easily because of the iPhone. I mean, it told me exactly where it was.
Yeah. How extensive is the 3G network in the States? Because certainly over here, I mean, it's available, but really people with 3G tend to use it more with a laptop and a USB dongle than actually on a mobile device. So I'm just wondering, you know, how... Because I know there was problems when the iPhone first launched about the availability of the edge network in certain markets. I mean, how extensive is the 3G network over there?
Not as extensive as the edge network, but my understanding is that AT&T has been working overtime to get the 3G network more robust and more widespread. And everyone's assuming that that's because of the imminent iPhone launch.
If you build it, they will come.
I think that's exactly right. Exactly. What I would really like is Apple to come out with, if they do come out with, kind of like what you suggested, David, an external add-on, Bluetooth maybe.
Yeah.
3G network. I don't want to say car, just a dongle.
Yeah.
That it also works with Macintosh computers.
Yeah.
That would be very, very interesting to me.
Indeed. I think... It would be very frustrating if they launched such a device and it was only for the iPhone. Really, really frustrating.
That would tick me off, wouldn't it, you guy?
Yeah, I would agree.
But not any Mac user could just pick it up and use it because you need to have access to the network. And of course, the iPhone's going to have built-in access because you're a subscriber with AT&T or whatever carrier it happens to be. But with the Mac, how do you do that? Well, if you sync your iPhone to your, say, your PowerBook. See, there I go back in time again. Your MacBook or your MacBook Pro, then it just knows, okay, this is synced, so you can use the network.
It will use the network
through the iPhone.
There is a very interesting device that I've seen that is kind of, they call it a mobile router. And effectively what it does is it takes a 3G connection, either a card or a USB dongle, and then it redistributes that over Wi-Fi. And you start kind of, it's battery powered, you carry this thing in your pocket, and it allows you to share a 3G connection to a whole bunch of devices or computers in your area.
That's very interesting. That's something that I would be interested in myself. Yeah. If I was on a 3G network already, say with AT&T.
Right. Yeah, it's frustrating. It's a US-only device, and it wouldn't work with my 3G device that I have here in the UK, unfortunately. Otherwise, I would probably buy one.
No, that's very interesting. There's a lot of us talk with Wi-Fi, or not Wi-Fi, what do you call it? The
WiMAX.
WiMAX. Thank you, David. The WiMAX, if anybody could bring that into popularity, don't you think it would be Apple?
Only if it was cross-platform.
Well, the iPod wasn't cross-platform. USB started on the Mac. Nobody else had it.
Right, but when did the iPod really take off?
But that's only to
also the Windows users.
Right, but initially I think that they would probably offer something like that to Mac users as an incentive for PC users to buy the Mac. And you also have to look at what's going on in the market right now. PC sales are dropping big time.
Yeah.
Yet Mac sales are doubling.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were up over 51% quarter to quarter.
So if you look at those statistics, don't you think that adding something like this, any Mac could get on the internet no matter where you are, at least in 95% of the country?
But the network isn't there for that. I mean, rolling out a WiMAX network is even more expensive than rolling out a 3G network.
Yeah,
so I think that's probably an idea that's coming before its time, really. I mean, certainly I know a lot of my clients in my business over here in the UK are asking me lots of questions about WiMAX, but there are some big question marks about actually how the network will be operated here.
Yeah, it's going to be even worse here in the States, I'm sorry to say. So that's all I've got for the show, guys. What do you guys got? Anything else that we need to cover before we take off?
I wanted to talk about something I found on the MacSales Otherworld Computing website this week.
Awesome.
Yes.
So,
wonderful sponsors.
Our wonderful sponsors. That's right. And, you know, it's interesting when you browse around the site and see the sorts of things they offer. The kind of depth of how they offer them really impresses me. And what I was looking at this week was a 4 GB RAM module upgrade kit. Now this will go in the MacBook Pros, the iMac, or the Mac Mini. Basically,
like $400 from Apple.
Exactly. The thing is that, you know, particularly if you're running Leopard, these machines eat RAM for breakfast, and you really only get the best performance out of the Intel chipsets in the latest Apple Macs if you have plenty of memory. The way the cache is structured in the Intel chipset means that they really need a lot of memory to keep that cache populated. And if you only have the default memory that Apple ships with you, you're not going to get the best performance out of the machine. So really,
it's a bottleneck.
Yeah, exactly. So your best bet is to try and put as much memory in there as you can. So a pair of 2 GB modules is absolutely the best way to go. Now, if you go into the Apple Store and specify that when you click online or when you order it in an Apple Store, then Apple will charge you $400. And you can think, okay, $400 for 4 GB, maybe that's the going rate. Go to Otherworld Computing on the MacSales website, and they will sell you the same module set, fully specified and matched to the Mac, for $95. $94.99. And not only that, they will also, not only will they, this is the memory that's absolutely guaranteed to work with all the Macs, and they will also offer you a modest rebate on your existing memory as well. So you can go in and buy a new MacBook, say, and you can then take the memory chips out of it, get a small rebate on that $95 cost.
Here's another aspect of it that you're probably not thinking of, David. Anybody can sell your RAM, cheap RAM.
Yep.
Doesn't mean it's going to work well.
No.
They do. So they guarantee that their RAM is top quality, and I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
But beyond that, because a lot of Mac users now are new to computing or new to the Mac, they're not so comfortable about cracking open their laptop, for instance, or even their iMac, and installing new RAM into it. It's very intimidating.
Yeah.
What Otherworld Computing does, and not very many other places that I've ever seen online does this, they actually offer movies, QuickTime movies, right on their site, step-by-step instructions on how to do it.
Yeah.
So you could literally watch that movie and learn how to do it. It's a fabulous service that they provide.
Yeah, I would agree. Another cool thing about Otherworld Computing is, especially if you have an older Mac and you're not really sure what type of equipment is going to be compatible with it, you know, pick your poison. You know, whatever type of upgrade you want to do, once you get to that section, you pick your machine, and it'll come up and give you the exact type of equipment that will be compatible with your Mac. You're not just going to get a big long list of stuff. Right. Oh, will this work with it? Will it not work with it? You'll only see the stuff that works with your Mac.
Yep, yeah. And that's a fantastic service. So thank you very much, Otherworld Computing. Of course, that is a commercial that we just did, but it's also content that we think can benefit any Mac user. Say you buy memory somewhere else and you're just unsure, you've had it for a couple weeks already, and you're like, yeah, I'm still really nervous. You can go up to Otherworld Computing and view their videos on how to install RAM in it. It's a free service that they offer.
Yeah, MacFixit's also really good for that.
MacFixit's a great site for that as well. Yeah.
And if you're using your Mac and you do start getting odd behavior like kernel panics or crashes that you don't understand, then look at your RAM and think about where you sourced it from. If you bought cheap RAM off eBay that was specified for your Mac, but it doesn't actually say when you receive it that it's specific Mac memory, then that's something to think about.
In sad news, as we talked about a couple weeks ago here on the podcast, Mac Central founder and Mac Minute founder Stan Flack passed away. Up on the Mac Minute website, there's a note from his sister Julie, and I actually talked to Julie on the phone last week, at the end of last week, about Mac Minute and what could happen. And I also, offered my services to her if she needs any help with her computers, because obviously with Stan passing away, her family computing consultant is no longer there. Now, we are, for our families, guys, we're that person.
Yeah.
Stan was obviously that person for his family, so I told her if she ever needs any help, just to let me know. But unfortunately, the bad news is she's not going to be able to continue running Mac Minute. So Mac Minute will be closing its doors for good in the relatively near future.
It's too bad.
And it really comes down to liability. Unfortunately, things happen. She can't sell the site. Not that I was offering to buy it from her, but she can't sell it, and she cannot continue to run it. So the only thing she can do is simply let the site redirect to another site. I don't know what site she's going to redirect to, because there was a pretty vibrant community of forum users, so she'll probably point it to another Mac-related website that has a pretty popular forum, and those people could continue their discussions there. But it's sad that a site like that has to go down because the owner passes away. I have already taken steps to ensure that mymac.com, My Mac Magazine, will continue after I'm gone. I hope you guys would continue to do the podcast.
Sure would.
And yeah,
but without missing we would have black headbands on.
That's right, yeah.
So, it's sad news, but it happens.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap up the show, much shorter show this week. We're going to have some news here pretty soon about All Over the Mac, John Nemo's segment. I think what we're going to do is we're going to spin that off into a separate podcast. And I say that because I really like the stuff that John's doing, but it really doesn't fit into the format of this show.
Well, this is kind of what happened the last time when you had Chris Siebold that was doing Not Mac News. I was doing the Dashboard Minute.
David had Fenestration.
Yeah. Right.
But two of those have rolled into the main show where you two became co-hosts, and Chris really doesn't do anything anymore as far as podcasting. So that just leaves John. And with only one other segment beside what we're doing here, it just didn't really fit in with the show very well, I didn't think.
Are you going to move Cool Mac Picks over to that as well?
I thought about it, but because I do the Cool Mac Picks with Sam either before or after we record the main show or as part of the main show, it does fit in with the rest of the show. That's so we'll see. But that may be an opportunity there as well, Guy. If we do it, the people that subscribe to this show will not automatically get the other podcast. We're going to start up a brand new RSS feed for that secondary podcast. And that way, John can build the audience for that show independently of this show. I mean, those who like this show is probably going to want to listen to that as well. But it really is a different type of show. John really talks to a number of people, very
regular, everyday Mac users. Celebrity Mac users.
Yeah. And I just think it will do really well standing on its own. I don't think it needs us to keep that going. So
unlike
that's in the works. Unlike Dashboard. Not, yeah, <that's right. laughs> So, you know, that's something else for you, Guy. If you're missing Dashboard Minute, you can resurrect it and send it on that show.
Yeah, I'm sure there's at least two people out there that would be thrilled by that news.
Absolutely. Well, maybe three.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I don't count my wife.
So as we wrap up our segment, I want to thank Guy and David for being on the show this week. Because it's an abbreviated show, we're not going to have Lee on. Lee usually comes in after our first hour of talking and chatting and starting to record the podcast, and we bring him in at the end of the show.
Yeah, I hope he can, you know, work out whatever, you know, problems he has in getting home.
Scheduling it.
Yeah.
I would love to have him on the entire show every week.
No doubt.
It just hasn't worked out that way, unfortunately. And I know he wants to do it, but, you know, you got to put your job and your family first.
Yeah.
I completely understand.
Well, how busy could he be at AOL?
Really? It's just America Online. Yeah.
Come on.
Absolutely. Come on. Get with the program. But we do have Sam Levin's Cool Mac pick, so going to play that now, and then that will be the show. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot.
And it's time for Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin. Hello, Sam.
If you have a digital camera or a phone, then you know who SanDisk is. And I would say they're probably the biggest in the world for memory cards. And not only that, they do make MP3 players as well. But today we're going to talk about their memory cards. I carry one with me constantly in my digital camera. And one of them in particular is really cool. It's called the SanDisk Extreme Ducati Edition SD Plus. And what's cool about it is that it's that Ducati red. So it's kind of interesting in that it's, I think they co-branded with Ducati. And also, the SD card actually becomes a USB drive. So you can pull it to the side, or I don't know how to explain it, but basically it collapses and becomes a USB thumb drive.
Neat.
It's very cool. The one that I have is a 4 gigabyte version. It's extremely fast in uploading. So take my pictures from my digital camera, stick it into my MacBook Pro, it opens iPhoto, and basically I select import, and it imports all my photos, including the videos, because I take videos on my Canon digital camera. So I absolutely love it, and I've got their older one. They make a 1 gigabyte version, a 2 gigabyte version that isn't Ducati. This is a special one. You get a keychain. You get all this bling with it. I think it is the bee's knees. So, especially because of the SD Plus version. So check them out at sandisk.com. It's about $129, but I think the reason for the price is because of the Ducati. It's very fast, and it also is limited edition.
Limited editions always go for more money.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is, you know. I'm a limited edition kind of guy. But also, we've got a very cool company called Audio Engine.
Oh, I know them.
Well, you know, we know them. They've been around for a while. They make some very, very high-quality powered speakers. Now, I think we've talked about Audio Engine before, but this is the new A2 desktop speaker. These are a small version of the first Audio Engine speakers they came out with. And they're really, really nicely built. They're a lacquered design, or a lacquered cabinet. They come in white or black. And you are able to plug your audio jack in the back, so you can plug an iPod in the back of these speakers. You can plug them directly into your stereo if you want. So they are powered. They're really well made. The sound is excellent. And they're very, very small. Now, one of the cool things about it is the jack that is that audio jack will also serve as a jack for a mini sub. So you can plug a sub and get really rich sound. And they're not expensive. They're $199.
That's not bad.
No, not bad at all. And I just think they've done a very nice job. I think they're built in China, but the quality is really nice. If you go to audioengineusa.com, you'll see the whole page. They make a whole line of speakers, and this is one of them. They even sell the
sub-powered subwoofer.
Yeah, it's called the AS8 powered subwoofer. And then lastly, they also make a wireless audio adapter. And this, did you see these guys at Macworld Expo?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so it's a very cool adapter. I have not played around with it because I'm spending a lot of time on the speakers because I'm really into, you know, music. But basically, it allows you to wirelessly stream your iPod to the speakers. So I have
any loss of quality?
I don't think so. Now, I have to wait and see. You know, I said, let me test this out. It comes in a pack of two. It's $149. They're black, and they've got a USB port on the back and then a jack on the other side. And I'm going to test those after I fully give the A2s a run for their money. And then the only other thing that I haven't tested is the subwoofer because I really don't have one yet. They're really hard to come by. These guys sell out of all their products quickly.
That's a good problem to have.
Well, I know. It's a good problem. It's a bad problem. That means that they're not making enough, but, you know, that's okay.
Seems to be working for Nintendo.
Yeah, exactly. And that's from the folks from Audio Engine. I can't say enough about their speakers. They're really well made. They did a great job. They're a small company, and I think they're going to continue to come out with very, very high-quality products for not just iPod. You could plug it into your PowerBook, your desktop. Does not matter. They're speakers, right?
Right.
And then our folks at Jabra have just come out with a Bluetooth speakerphone called the SP5050. And I haven't tested it yet, so next week we're going to talk about it. It's a really cool visor speakerphone that's Bluetooth. Works with the iPhone. Works with other phones as well, but particularly for the iPhone, because all of us need a solution, because as of July, in California, you have to be
hands-free.
Hands-free, yep. That is. And so we're going to check that out. And then also, we're going to talk about Jawbone, their second version called the Jawbone 2. I just got that. I think we're going to do a full in-depth write-up, but at least I can talk about the usage of it because I've been using it for the last 3 days.
Well, I've got the Jawbone 1, and I like it, but I'm not a big headphone wearer, so I haven't used it as much as I would prefer.
Right, right. Well, Jawbone, or the company's called Aleph, they've done a very nice job with the new design. It's about 50% smaller. The fit is better. The clarity, I think, is better because they've opened up the earpiece where you're listening to the sound.
Right.
I think they've done a very nice job. It's going to come in three different color swatches, if you will. And it's the same price, $129. And it works with Mac. It works with PCs. So if you're using VoIP, like iChat, Skype, and it works seamlessly with the iPhone, turn it on, hit connect, it works. So you don't have
Sweet.
To worry about any of that. My only wish is that they'd make the AC connector smaller so that, you know, I don't have to carry all that cabling around. That's my only wish for the next Jawbone 3. So
I know there's one other thing that you're using right now to speak to me, which is pretty new, but it's probably a little early to give any kind of a definitive, this is really cool and this isn't very good.
Well, I can tell you it's the Snowflake USB mic by Blue. It's very cool. We're using it as we speak, as I speak. That's what I'm speaking with you on over Skype. Really well made. It's metal. It collapses into its own case, and that case becomes a desktop stand as well.
So, really?
Yeah. They've done a very nice job. You know, Blue does the Snowball mic, the big version. So,
but this is more for laptop users, though.
This is for targeted for more mobile users, I'll say. And one of the reasons why you probably said laptop is because it's got a little hinge when you open it that will clasp on the lip of your notebook.
Sweet.
So that's something that does seamlessly. It's, you know, I think they did a very nice job. It's out of the way, and it's just cool. I love that little. It's kind of that retro microphone look.
And that comes to us from our friends at Dr. Bot. Let's give them a shout out since they're the ones that sent it to you for testing. So
thank you very much. I'm gonna start using it with iChat, with QuickTime, with iMovie. I'm just going to do some whole mess of production stuff with it, but look, if it sounds great, it's because we're using it now and it works great. But I'm sure we'll do more of an in-depth review. But I like it, and I'm going to start carrying it with me when I'm traveling. So that's it. But there's a lot of other things, a lot of other cool toys, more SanDisk stuff we'll talk about because they have a lot of products, and obviously Jabra. We'll talk about that next week. We'll talk a little bit more about Jawbone and also hard drives. I'm waiting to get the Western Digital 320 gig portable drive. So,
wow, that's a monster.
Yep. So I can't.
And I know that WWDC is coming up. Anything special there for you?
That's the Worldwide Developers Conference from Apple. I think we're going to see the announcement on the 2.0 iPhone software. I think that's one. And that will incorporate, I believe, iPhone gaming, also enterprise applications. And I probably would think that they'll talk about or announce the new iPhone, but, you know, we don't know. That's rumor. But
are you going to visit the WWDC at all this year?
I'll be at the keynote. And unfortunately, guys, I can't communicate during keynote because they shut down any type of wireless connectivity.
Yeah, for a reason.
So what I'll do is I'll do a report afterwards, and I can call in because everything else is wireless. The minute you get out of there, I can connect. So why don't we do a Skype on that, on all the announcements, because I think there will be the iPhone announcement. But there'll be several announcements. That's what I think. Who knows if there's new machines? Who knows? But it'll all be good.
There's definitely going to be some stuff to talk about. Sam, appreciate you joining on the show this week. We'll see you next week.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.